session number 21064, Reel 2.
Tom Noel, Reel 2.
The regiment moved down to Chiseldon, which was a little village just below Swindon in Wiltshire. And whilst there, we were part of the 6th Armoured Division. This was the Lorried Infantry Division part of the division. And whilst we were there, with the shooting team that we had now organised and put into training, we were able to go to the Southern Command shoots, the Bisley shoots, and shoots of that nature, target shooting, with a view to enhancing the regiment's prowess with the rifle shooting.
What kind of standard had you reached by then in marksmanship?
Myself, I was a fairly good shot anyway. I was a naturally good shot. And because of the courses and everything that I'd sort of been sent on with the regiment, the platoon weapons, for instance, particularly, which dealt with all the platoon-sized weapons, rifles, grenades, Sten guns, revolvers and that sort of thing. I also went on to a sniper course at a later date with a view to enhancing the skills in the rifle still further. So I was considered to be quite a good shot.
What type of things did they teach you in the sniper course?
Further advancement of training with the rifle, more detailed instruction from the rifle's point of view as to its potential, its calibre, its characteristics, things like that, what the rifle could do. Then we were taught how to use the scope and the rifle in a sniper type version of the infantry mode. All this comes back down to thinking like ballistics training for the rifle, as opposed to what a normal man wouldn't get in his own infantry training. We went deeper into it. As a result of that, we ended up with something like 4 months of training in the sniper conditions. The training for the sniper itself would have to include both the rifle for shooting purposes, concealment purposes, being able to move to and from a position in order to take on any enemy, and then retract yourself after dealing with the enemy back into your own environment. The whole aspect of sniper work itself would be a case of being able to conceal yourself correctly, which is all the field craft which is involved in it, and your equipment as well.
So what happened next?
From the regimental point of view, we had quite a successful year at Bisley, winning several competitions. Our own CO was the two IC who formed the battalion shooting team whilst we were at Central had now become, on our move down south to Chiselton, he'd now become our commanding officer. And it was our commanding officer who was the sort of the driving force behind the team. He actually won the Army 100 Cup at Bisley, in I think it was 1950 or 51. We stayed down in Chiselton doing that sort of thing, an infantry training, lorry training and exercising. Then in August of that year, we went to Germany, to Minden in Germany. We were transferred, still part of the 6th Armoured Div. And we then took up a place in Minden called Queen Elizabeth Barracks, but it was a former SS barracks that had been used by the Germans. This was in late 51, August onwards 51. I was on the advance party to Germany. The advance party that went on ahead of them, was the usual thing was to get things organised so that when the regiment, the full regiment, came along, the changeover was smooth and they settled in no time at all. I was given the job at that particular time of looking after the officers' mess in Germany, in Minden. And whilst I was doing that, I was still doing the weapon training side for the shooting team.
How did you get on with the German population at that time?
Well, this was in late 1951 and early 52. The German population by this time had got used to our occupation, the armed forces being there, and they accepted it with some good grace, really. We didn't have any serious trouble at all with the inhabitants. In fact, to say that we were the people living in their land, if you like, after conquering them, or whatever you like to call it, I think they accepted us with a good deal more grace than what I think we would have done if we'd have been overrun by the Germans.
What happened next?
The usual training went on. We had winter training, hardship training. During the German winters could be quite cold. And during this period, we had hardening up exercises. And then in February of 1952 was the death of King George VI. And round about that time, we were due to go up to Sennelager in the northern part of Germany as a shooting regiment. We did very well there as a shooting regiment. In fact, we came second in the regimental team shooting. A corporal in my section was the Rhine Army champion rifle shot for that year. And as a regiment, out of all this group of people we took as a shooting team, both rifle and pistol, brain guns, we did very well.
So, did you then go to Korea?
We were warned to go to Korea after in middle of 1952. I suppose the top brass would have been informed before that time, but we, round about the time when we were at Sennelager and coming back from the force, we were doing, as a shooting team, whilst the regiment was in Germany, we were doing zone-type training and shooting against the other NATO countries that were involved on a target shooting competitions, which we did very well at. We then came back to into a regiment in Minden for a short stay, then back to England to see to the Bisley shooting in July. Around about this time, I was ordered to go to Pontefract in Yorkshire on the advance party again for Korea. This time, because of my weapon training side and my skills in the sniper world, which I'd done quite well on the training side, got good marks from the School of Infantry, I took up my leadership job of sniper sergeant for the regiment. And on this role, I went to Pontefract in Yorkshire to get kitted out and get fixed up to go to Korea with the advance party for the regiment. This was around about July, end of July, August time. And the whole bunches that had come away from Germany to Pontefract for this particular episode was a mixture of machine gunners, mortarmen, riflemen, motormen, the nucleus of an advance party that would get the regiment up and running when it got to Korea. So we set sail from Southampton in the Empire Orwell. Takes about 4 or 5 weeks to get to Korea in the stages that the troop ships were running. Something like Gibraltar first stop, Malta, then on to Port Said in the northern part of the canal, down through the canal and the Red Sea to Aden, across from Aden to Colombo, which is now Sri Lanka, Colombo down the Straits of Malacca down to Singapore, and then across the China Sea towards Hong Kong. This all took about 4.5 weeks. To get there. And during this period on the boat, on the ship, we had the usual training facilities and lectures on what we were expected to find in Korea, what to expect in the way of health problems, things like that.
Do you remember any of the specific advice they gave you on the boat?
About the climate and whatever, yes. The temperatures, until then, no one seemed to know quite a lot about Korea itself. They knew of Korea, they knew the history of how Korea came in to be in conflict with the rest. But as to things like the terrain of the ground, the maps and things like that, they seemed to be in short supply. There weren't many people around who were sort of clued upon it. So we had to learn all this while we were, or as much as we could of this, while we were on board ship.
Did you feel apprehensive about going?
A little bit, yes. It's just one of those things where you've got 4 weeks in which to think about all these things that could happen. And then by the time you get there, you're thinking to yourself, well, here it is, here we are, we'd now might as well get on with it. Other than saying, we wish we hadn't come, or we wished it would have been someone else who was coming in our place. You didn't think about that. It was a case of, this is what you've been trained to do, this is what the regiment is about, and this is what you're going to do.
What was your arrival in Korea like?
When we finally arrived in Korea on the Orwell, we arrived in a southernmost port called Busan. And we were there, we were met. As the ship docked and sided up to the harbour side, we were greeted by an American military band. The usual thing, there were dignitaries from the Koreans, little girls with garlands of flowers for the dignitaries to be sort of presented with. And all during this period, the American band, mostly Negro, black players, we thought, after the first opening march that they played, everyone crowding onto the side of the ship to be able to see what was going on. They played an American march for starters, and then they almost immediately switched on to jazz-type routines. For us in the British Army, we were used to the British Army bands and that playing military-type marches and stuff like that. It was most unusual. And they played all the time that the ship was in its docking process and having the dignitaries present greetings from the southern Korean people to our ship's officers and whatever on the quayside. Thereafter, it was a case of having a meal and then getting ready for embarking on train, which we eventually did. We got loaded onto a train, if you can call it a train. It was a series of compartments type trains. It was nothing as comfortable as what we have in England. It was just a rough and ready type train, no windows in the thing. There were window frames, but no glass. Towards the end of the compartment, there was a water bag fixed up. It was a proper military type train. We were then embarked on and set off in the late afternoon and evening. We went up throughout the night up to a place called Tokchon, where we disembarked.
What impression had the country made on you at first?
The one of hills, really. The topographical features, looked around, in Busan particularly, when you first arrived there, you thought, if this is like the rest of the country is going to be, it's going to be all hills of this nature. It's going to be pretty difficult. I was thinking in terms of the military objectives to be caught and held and things like this, which an infantry regiment would have to do. This looked quite daunting, actually, by just looking at the hills and seeing what it was all about.
What happened at Tokchon?
The train came into a siding and stopped, and then we disembarked from there. This was in the early mornings, towards breakfast time when we arrived there, and we were bussed up then into a holding area just behind the front line, where we were going to meet, we of the advance party, we were going to meet the people who were going to look after us, with a view to, when the regiment came, we were going to take over from them. So we went to the Welsh regiment. Everyone in the advance party went into their respective departments to be sort of briefed about what was expected and what they were doing, and overlooking everything that they were doing with a view to, so that when the regiment came in eventually, all these corners of the information would be to hand and it would be a smooth changeover. In point of fact, we were supposed to have been handed over in reserve. But the regiment that we handed over or took over from and they handed over to us, in actual fact, was taken over on the front line, on the front line conditions.
This is the Welsh regiment?
The Welsh regiment was in a place called Yong Dong, in part of the Commonwealth sector at the time. But we thought the original instance was the fact that we were going to be handing over to people in a sort of reserve area ready for moving up as a regiment. But in actual fact, the advance party went and stayed with the Welsh regiment, who were actually in the front line, doing their normal routines of patrolling and what have you.
What were your first impressions of the front line in Korea?
Well, we'd been expecting it to be fine, because by this time the line across Korea was a stalemate, and it was more or less like the front line conditions of the First World War. There was a demarcation type of zone area which we would call no man's land, similar to what you had in the First World War. The ups and downs of the movement of MacArthur's American armies up and down the country had by this time stalemated and gone and held one another just upside of the 38th parallel. And this little place called Panmunjom that we had just below the border of the 38th parallel was where they held the peace talks. But we were north of the Imjin River, something like 30 miles north of Seoul, where the Commonwealth Division was situated. And part of this little tributary which ran down into the Imjin River was called the Samishon River. The Duke of Wellington's eventually became the cornerstone of that little piece of ground, overlooking the Hook features. This was all part and parcel of the Commonwealth Div's area. The Welsh regiment at that particular time were in this particular corner spot, and as I say, it was called Yong Dong. When our regiment came in to take over from them, we handed over, and we spent a few weeks in there in that position.
What did you think of the positions the Welsh regiment had made?
Well, looking at it at first hand from an outsider's point of view, it looked as though they'd done as much as they could to fortify the place and make it as safe and as secure as possible. But because of the stalemated condition of the war at that particular time, the area between the British forces and the Chinese forces was considered anybody's land, no man's land, if you like, and it was whoever controlled this area of ground would be the principal sort of player in the game. And because of this, they instituted all different types of patrols. You had the standing patrol, which was the most immediate patrol in front of your own positions. You got recce patrols of four or five men, an officer or a sergeant with four or five men, just to go out and reconnoiter the area, fact-finding, information gathering, that sort of thing. Then you had the larger patrols, anything up to 15 or 20 men would be called a fighting patrol. An officer, sergeant and 15 or 20 men, with a view to going out and taking the fight to the enemy, as they used to call it. All these sort of patrols were a view to sort of commanding the immediate area in front of your positions, controlling no man's land. Then, of course, you got the specialist type of patrol. An officer or a sergeant with two or three men would go out on a specialist type job, like to snatch a Chinese, or at that particular time they weren't Chinese because the Chinese were mainly in front of us, rather than the North Koreans. These patrols would go out on what would be called a snatch party. They would go out with a view just to pick up people who might have some information about what the Chinamen were doing or what the organisation was like, and this was another diverse sort of job which they did. Myself and the sniper sergeant that I was with in the advance party from the Welsh regiment, they had a similar sort of an operation where the distances across the valley were sometimes anything like up to 1,000 or 1,200 yards. You had to contain the efforts by observation, going out on patrols and building hides and seeking out, watching the key points of the opposite front, and just more or less delaying anything that may cause the Chinaman to form a patrol or similar attack on ours. All this was done with a view to building up intelligence about the operations of the enemy across the valley. By the time our regiment came into being and took over from the Welsh regiment, we more or less occupied the same amount of ground, the same positions, and the intelligence and sniping setup was such that we were able to form a team of men to go to all these outpost points and operate as observers, snipers. This worked quite well until the bad weather came in, of course, and when the bad weather came in, it restricted everybody's opportunities of doing work.
So you'd arrived in the summer, had you?
We arrived, the regiment arrived in the August, back end of August time. So it was quite mild and pleasant. In fact, their autumn, the Korean autumn, was quite a mild, pleasant affair. But within a few short weeks of that, the weather hardened and settled into a routine of really cold temperatures.
What impression had the snipers in the Welsh regiment made on you?
They seemed to be a very efficient team of men. They only had four men that I could see that I knew of. There was a sergeant and four men, allied to the intelligence setup, which is the normal routine. I went out with the sergeant separately rather than the team. They usually went out in pairs, so they had two pairs working out for it on the intelligence setup. And the sergeant was then able to give me a little bit of time, and we went out together and did various recces on some of the features in front of the ground that we were looking after. And it was all to do with finding out where things were, where the minefields were, where the gaps in for inlet and outlet of our patrol would be. All this information had to be garnered and get ready for when the regiment came in and took over.
Who was in your sniper team in the Dukes?
Who was in them?
Do you remember the names?
Most of them. Myself, I was a sniper sergeant. I had a corporal called Corporal Joe Bills, who was the Rhine Army champion we mentioned earlier. Philip Seymour, he was an older type of soldier, and he didn't fit in too well with the younger element, and as a result of that, he paired off with myself, and we formed a pair to work out and leave the other two or three pairs to work out in their pairs. There's an interesting feature about this. During the period that we had the shooting team in the regiment, all these lads that were earmarked for sniping duties and was in the sniping and intelligence setup, both in England and in Germany. When we went to Korea, the CO in his wisdom decided to put these lads in the forward company with the knowledge that they'd already gained. They put them, separated them, and put them out in the various companies with a view to using their skills up at the forward end in the company areas. And the War Office edict at that time was the fact that if you had a band within the regiment when you're on active service, the band would become stretcher bearers or something of the like. The drum section would then become snipers. I can never understand this at all, but this was the way of things. The lads who were excellent shots, proven excellent shots, And they'd gone through all the training with us as a sniping and weapon training skills to their hand. They were sent along to the companies, which naturally they would do a great deal of good in the front companies to the various other sections. We then inherited drum lads that had no knowledge at all about sniping. And so it was from a standing start. You'd then to kick them into shape by training them up as you could, actually while we're doing the job. So you end up with a series of little groups, or two-man teams, pairs as they used to call them, doing observation and sniping duties, and they were directed according to what intelligence we had at hand by the intelligence officer and sergeant. And they would perform daily or bi-weekly tasks, things like this, to keep the intelligence section up to date and informed with the observation news. This was plus the fact of what was being fed back from the forward companies.
Could you make your views known about this War Office edict?
Yeah, didn't seem to make any difference. This was the nature of the thing. The one man that did stay back, as I said, this one man that stayed back with me was a man called Philip Seymour. He's now dead. He was older than he'd been serving in the Middle East before, and he was an older soldier than the younger element. And so I more or less had occasion, on many occasions, to work with him as a pair, instead of going out and organising the pairs from behind, like you would normally be expected to do. The intelligence people were sorting that out, and we were able then to sort of make an extra pair by me going out with this chap. And we did quite a lot of work together, actually, he and I.
So at the moment, you're still with the Welsh Regiment, familiarising yourself.
Yeah.
Any incidents from the time you were with the Welsh Regiment?
There was one occasion when the Americans were over on the Hook, which was the next feature down to us, which we later inherited. There was one occasion when the Chinamen decided to have a go at the Americans, and there was quite a battle going on all night. It was like a fireworks display, mainly, with everything being slanted across towards the Americans on the Hook, which was the other side of the valley from where we were, rather than at the Welshmen in particular. One or two odd shells and mortar bombs did actually land in their area, but nothing, anything like serious. And this was my first, if you like, my first indoctrination to becoming under shelling and mortar fire, machine gun fire, because whilst I wasn't actually under it, I was close enough and adjacent to it to think, you know, the outcome of all this would be that there'd be quite a lot of casualties.
Can you tell me about the arrival of the regiment in Korea, please?
Yeah, I didn't know much about the arrival by train. They did more or less the same routine that we did. They arrived in Busan, they were met and garlanded and played to by the military bands like we had in our particular time. They were trained up to Tokchon, which was the railhead at that time. Then they arrived in, I don't know how long they'd been in Korea before they actually came up to the Welsh Regiment, but I was on hand when the RSM of our regiment came along, and I was able to introduce him to the RSM of the Welsh Regiment and get him organised in that area. And then the intelligence side and the sniper side came to join us, and we more or less did a sort of a stand around and talk and introduce one another so that with a view to taking over their jobs. On this particular occasion, the regimental sergeant major of the Welsh had got himself a fairly substantial hoochie. In those days, it was a building either of sandbags or wood, or dug into the earth or into the hillside, of a strong point, just to protect yourself from the incoming shells and mortar bombs. Mr. Williams, the RSM of the Welsh Regiment, must have made some remark about this is where he lived and this is where he operated from. And our RSM had brought with him a tent of sorts. It was like now what you call a campus tent, you know, with the small little campus tent which goes on a hill climber's job. It's not a great big job, but sufficient for one man to get into. The RSM had brought this along, thinking that this is how he would survive. I think his tent lasted about a week.